Bubba Wallace joins us on Sports Byline. I think he's one of the most interesting people in sports, and particularly in NASCAR. He's talented and refreshingly honest, and among his accomplishments are the highest-ranking African-American in the Daytona 500. He was second in 2018, highest-finishing African-American in the Brickyard 400. He was third in 2019, and the first African-American to win in the NASCAR Gander Outdoor Truck Series as well. And in 2020, Michael Jordan announced that he and NASCAR veteran Denny Hamlin created a NASCAR team, and it was named 23XI Racing, with Bubba serving as the first driver in the number 23. Bubba, 2020 certainly has been a weird year in so many ways for everybody, with the COVID, the shutdown of sports, and in NASCAR, it was a year of racism with the garage incident and social change with NASCAR banning the Confederate flag at NASCAR races. What perspective do you have on the year and the NASCAR season?
Yeah, it's definitely one to forget, but also not to forget. There was a lot of ups and downs, a lot of positives, a lot of negatives. It's just something my mom always told me, you know, to weather the storm, never let the highs get too high and lows get too low. Just got to kind of stay on that beaten path and stay focused on the task at hand. So with everything that was thrown at us, good and bad, it shaped me to who I could be today. And you don't look back, you always look forward.
You know, that's an interesting perspective, because knowing that focus is such an important part of sports, especially with the high-profile athlete, the highly skilled athlete, how hard was it throughout the season for you, with all that was happening, for you to keep that focus week in and week out?
You know, it's funny. I think I did better. I had some of my better races when I was being thrown to the wolves with media requests and just doing everything. So when my focus was taken away, I seem more in focus. So it's just kind of crazy how you can balance those things out and continue to deliver.
Let's go back to the beginning. Tell me a little bit about growing up in Concord, North Carolina.
Yeah, so I moved to Concord when I was two. And so it's really home for me. I moved from Mobile, Alabama. Don't remember one thing about Mobile. but moved up here when I was two. And then about 7 years later, we ended up buying a go-kart and going racing. And so I'm kind of right here in the heart of it. I now live about 15 minutes from where I actually grew up. And so that's I've stayed close to home. And it just makes the most sense to be right here local. I'm about 25 minutes from the city, about 25 minutes from our race shop. I'm very central of everything. So I think right here is very beneficial, super relaxing, very quiet, out by myself. So I love it.
Yeah, Concord also is the home of the Charlotte Motor Speedway. How old were you when you saw a race there?
So I remember going there for a race. I don't remember how old I was, but we went there for dinner. We were like in the Speedway Club. We went there for dinner one night, and there was a race going on or something. I don't even remember, but I was just like, okay, can we go home yet? I think it was maybe four or five. And so that was my first memory. And then I remember actually my dad had an old I forgot what kind of car it was, but we were able to take it on the track, and I thought we were going to flip over from the banking. So this is before I knew anything about NASCAR, what NASCAR was or anything. I remember taking a street car on the track and thought we were going to flip over, just how crazy steep the banking was. So fast forward a couple years later, being able to race on the speedway and getting to see races there was, you know, definitely a full circle.
What was it that hooked you on motorsports racing anyway?
I think just one thing was traveling. We got to go, you know, back when we were in the thick of it, Monday and Tuesday we were home. Wednesday and Thursday we were going to Atlanta. Friday and Saturday we were trying to pick between Kentucky or Nashville, just kind of wherever the competition would be. So just traveling all over, getting to see new things, try new foods, meet new people. Now, that was the biggest thing for me.
As you were growing up in motorsport racing, did you have any favorite drivers?
So my family was Dale Earnhardt Sr. fans for sure. And so I kind of inherited that. And like I said, I didn't get started till about 2002 or 2003. And so I remember the day we lost Dale Earnhardt Sr. And I cried like a baby, but I didn't really know much about the sport. I was upset because my parents were upset. And so, once we lost him, I kind of shifted it to Dale Jr. just because, the sun. And then I got to understand the sport more and know more about it and become a part of it. And, I thought that was pretty cool. Just, getting to see drivers you want to kind of step behind. And Jimmy Johnson's probably at the top of the list just from his accomplishments and the way he accomplishes life outside of the racetrack as well.
I know you started racing in the Bandanalero Legends Car Racing Series, and in 2005 you won 35 of the 48 races in that series. You started racing at the age of 9. I'm trying to picture that in my mind a little bit, Bubba. What that was like for you to be picking up that sport at that age?
Yeah, well, Ron, it's funny. You sit there and you got to think of, no, you don't need a driver's license. You just go out, if you can afford it, go out and do it. It's quite an expensive hobby, very expensive sport for sure. So you got to go out and do it. Then you kind of realize if you have it, if you have that it factor. And so I always talk about it and joke around. Like, when I have kids, I'm going to know right away. Like, all right, you have it or you don't. I'm going to be that parent that's super strict, especially if it jumps in into the motorsports world. So whatever it may be, but racing back then was fun. You had no worries, you had nothing to worry about. I remember playing football or running through the creeks and the woods at the racetracks 5 minutes before a race would start. And my dad always running through the pits to find me and to yell at me to get into the go-kart and go race. And we'd either win or wreck. And he'd always ask if I had fun. And he said, yep. He's all right, we'll be back and do it next weekend. So that's just kind of how it always was. Just show up, have fun, do the best that we can.
Tell me a little bit about that Bandolero series, because it sounds like it's interesting. And I know in my years of covering sports, particularly motorsports and NASCAR and everything, there is something about the community of auto racing that I think is special, no matter at what level it is.
Yeah, for sure. I think once you take a step into the motorsports world, you become a part of a huge family, whether that's a family of drivers, family of mechanics, whatever it may be. Everybody's family. And so word travels fast in the motorsports world, no matter, what discipline it is, NASCAR, F1, IndyCar, NHRA, MotoGP, it's all motorsports, all under that banner. And so, becoming a part of a community, they take you under their wing, and some people like it, some people don't. It just depends on how you carry yourself, how you handle the stress and the pressure, and how you, achieve things on the racetrack. And so, the Bandoleros were fun. The go-karts is where it actually started. But then it was like playing Pee Wee baseball, but having the Little League is there. They're going to play after you. And so you were always exposed to that next level when I was starting out. So I was like, okay, I'm in go-karts right now, but there's a Bandolero car. So it was like, okay, in 2 years, we're going to go get that. And I was like, all right. So we always had something to look forward to. So when we were racing in Bandoleros, we were exposed. So when we were Little League, we were exposed to whatever you want to call it, middle school ball by then. And so you were always exposed to that next step in my career, moving up through the ranks. So it was kind of a natural transition.
We've got about 90 seconds before we have to break, Bubba, but your dad was such an influence in your life, and I'm sure he kind of structured the way you looked at things, the way you were going to conduct yourself. What's the best piece of advice he ever gave you?
Yeah, my dad was a very, eye for an eye type of guy, and sometimes it was a little too much, but he was always about being fair, treating people the right way, treating people fairly, treating us fairly. It's simple, and so that was probably the biggest thing, is you always look out for what's right and for what's fair to you and what's fair to others, because that's how you want to be remembered, is somebody that treats you equally.
Do you remember something early in your life that really kind of challenged you to be able to honor that type of approach?
No, I think you look at, there was some races where we would show up and win and people didn't like it, and so they would do everything they could to stop us from winning, whether that's protesting, whether that's wrecking us or whatever. And so, hey, if you wrecked us, then we'll wreck you. That's how it was.
Any race stand out to you in the early part of your career that you'll never forget when you look back on it?
Man, we had a lot of good ones. We had a lot of bad ones. I'd say my very first race was a national event. Don't know what in the world we were thinking. 300, 400 plus carts there, and ended up getting into a wreck. And I remember the carts all beat, banged up, and tore to pieces. And I questioned my dad. I said, "Hey, can we fix it and get back out there?" He said, "Yep, we can." And that's how he kind of knew that we'd be in it for the long haul.
Bubba Wallace is here with us on Sports Byline USA. We're talking about his life and his career. And, of course, as I said at the very beginning, he's one of the most interesting people in sports, and particularly in NASCAR racing. And I think most of the people know the story about him during 2020. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But there's other aspects that are very interesting about his life and his career as well. And we'll talk about that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline. Bubba Wallace is with us here on Sports Byline USA. You know the name from NASCAR racing, and also very interesting background as well. You were with Joe Gibbs Racing on a development program. Explain a little bit more to me, not only what that is about, but also how it factored into the early part of your career.
Yeah, so when you're the development driver, you're kind of the, it depends on, you know, what team, what kind of form of racing it is, but you're kind of the test dummy. You're doing kind of the dirty work and figuring out what helps your organization grow. And so I was doing some testing for them. I remember going down to NASA when testing was allowed and doing 3 days worth of straight line testing, literally driving up and down the runway from 8 to 5. That's all you were doing. You test out aerodynamics. So I was doing that, but you're kind of working out all the bugs and the kinks, but also getting to race in the developmental series as well. So as you're still honing your craft, you're helping the organization grow. So that's how it is for a lot of teams. So that's kind of important to have, a very good aspect to have, but you also have to have stepping stones in place for that developmental driver to end up furthering his career path. So for me, it was, you know, jumping up into the truck series with Kyle Busch there. So it was kind of a natural fit with Kyle racing for Joe Gibbs there. So the paths kind of crossed mutually. And then after that, we kind of split ways. We split ways for the last 6 years. And I moved up to the Xfinity series and then now in the Cup series driving the 43. So it's kind of crazy how you can, you know, navigate your way through your career path. There's a lot of different avenues to go down, back and forth, round and round. But it always kind of brings you back to, you know, I think where you should be.
You know, it's interesting, Bubba. I've found in sports that every team organization has its own personality, no matter what the sport is. And I'm just wondering, knowing Joe Gibbs as I have when he was back in the NFL in Washington, D.C., I'm just wondering what the personality of his racing team was like.
Very, very buttoned up and business. You know, it was strictly business That was important. Those guys, they want to win, and they are very secretive about what goes on and who's in the know and everything. But I think that's, you know, why they are so successful. Having Toyota come in and be a part of the relationship and the organization has really, you know, changed the game. I think it's changed a lot for the sport, the way that Toyota does things on and off the racetrack with their drivers, with their race teams. So be a part of both organizations is a blessing, and being at the premier level of NASCAR, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in front of me to go out and capitalize on. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I knew him as a coach at Washington. And as I said, he was buttoned down at that time, so I'm not surprised to hear that at all.
That's
you
right.
Signed a deal to compete in the Xfinity series for Roush Fenway Racing. And I'm just wondering what that organization was like. And am I correct with saying that different organizations have different personalities?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, moving into the Xfinity series there, we were ready for the next step. And Roush provided that opportunity for us. And we went out and gave it our all, showed up to every race swinging. And some races it was for us, some races it was against us. But we always kept learning each and every time out. So I look back on the mistakes that I made, like on the racetrack, that cost us some good finishes, potential wins. But you know, everything's a learning curve. Every day you learn something new, and you know, being a part of that team, you learn, you know, more about how different teams are. Like you said, the personalities are, and it kind of shapes and molds you into it. You keep molding each and every day. Especially, I know I am. I'm hard headed, and usually it takes me a couple tries to figure something out. So, you know, getting a better hold on that, going through that has been was really cool. So, you know, I've been a part of some really big race teams, Joe Gibbs, Jack Roush, Richard Petty. You know, there's a lot of big names on my resume. So it's been fortunate, very blessed career path.
What was the best piece of advice you got from Richard Petty? Because you signed on with Petty Motorsports in 2017, and here is a guy who's a legend in the business. And I'm just wondering what he passed on to you that you feel helped you in your development.
Yeah, I think just taking every race, you know, as it comes to you. Looking at, you know, where we were, how we were an organization. We were basically David versus Goliath at a lot of the races that we showed up to. But knowing that our team and myself gelled really well and vibed 100%, we could show up with 200% effort each and every time. And I think, you know, seeing how Richard could manage the storms, manage the weather coming through, and the spotlight that he's in, it really shown a lot about his character and how he relates to his race team and making it a very family-oriented sport. And that's super crucial to me. I love family. Family is everything. And so having that aspect, being a part of your job and your career, it only helps it and only makes it that much more fun to go out and compete and do the best you can for your partners and for your crew guys, for everybody back at the shop. So being a part of the team with everybody at RPM was a blessing and a lot of fun being at the cup level. Having that kind of spotlight and that kind of pressure, I think I kind of lived for that. So I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Being with Petty Motorsports, you were the first African-American to race in the Cup Series since Bill Lester back in 2006. Willie T. Ribbs has been a friend of mine for a long period of time, and we've had long talks about the atmosphere in motor racing and things you have to deal with, particularly if you happen to be an African-American rather than other drivers. I'm just wondering, did you ever have a chance to talk to Bill or Willie about that experience?
No, actually, Bill has been a very vocal and a guy in my corner for a while now, so it's been good to have that relationship. And actually, just getting back from vacation, and he was on my list. He wants to talk, just go through some things. And talk about life. So we'll be catching up really soon on that, and I look forward to that conversation.
Yeah, and when you turn around and look around and try to get people who can give you insight, who do you look to? What type of people do you look to?
You know, it's funny. I'm not really a person to go out and seek advice from others. Like I said, I like to figure it out. That's why it takes me a couple tries to figure it all out. But, you know, through the thick of this season, when it was in the heavy part of it, Jimmy Johnson was probably the one that reached out the most. And that was pretty cool to have a guy you're competing against, but also he was worried about your mental health and how I was weathering the storm. And I thought that was super cool. And not just seeing him as a competitor, but seeing him as a friend. Just kind of helped our relationship grow, and that was pretty cool. So I'd have to go with Jimmy Johnson on that.
You know, one of the fascinating aspects of the sport that you're in is that I know during the 2020 season you were reunited with your crew chief, Jerry Baxter. Mm-hmm. That relationship is a very interesting relationship. Tell me how symbolic it is. How important, what are the elements to make for a good driver-crew chief relationship?
Yeah, I think for us, it really started back in 2013, and we immediately clicked. He was super informative about everything that was going on at the shop and would have me pumped up and ready to go at the races. And, you know, he was there to encourage you and to push you and motivate you to do things better and maybe try something different. And so we became really good friends. He was, you know, basically we were all part of family. We were family, and that was crucial. So even through the six-year break that we had from the Truck Series to the Cup Series, you know, we were in contact. If it wasn't every month, it was every other month, just kind of either poking fun at each other, going hang out at his house on the boat, whatever it may be. You know, we always remained close. So when the opportunity came about to have him, you know, be a part of the Cup Series and be a part of the madness, as we call it, he didn't hesitate. He wanted to do it, and he brought a lot of confidence, some that I had lost throughout the years. He kind of fulfilled that confidence meter back up to have me go to the racetrack and be competitive and feel like we had a fighting chance, even though sometimes we didn't. You know, the attitude that Jerry brought it was like, heck yeah, we can do this. So that's important, you know, and it's not just showing up at work being like, hey man, all right, let's go to the racetrack and let's do it again next week. Now, it's not a rinse and repeat. This was something, hey man, you know, let's go out to dinner. Let's go have fun. Let's go on vacation. Let's learn each other. Let's learn what makes each other tick, what makes each other, you know, angry, you know, and figure out how we can, you know, help each other grow together. And that's what you got to have to make these relationships work.
Tell me a little bit, Bubba, how you came to the comfort level of being able to speak out about what was happening to African Americans in this country, particularly after the George Floyd murder as well, and becoming the face of stock car racing's involvement in the Black Lives Matter movement, because that is something that is a two-edged sword in a sense. But you have always struck me as somebody comfortable with taking a position on something like that.
Yeah, there's not really many things that I'm not comfortable doing. And, you know, I knew in the back of my mind that there could be a risk of, you know, kind of jeopardizing your career. But it's kind of sad to think that, like, man, I want to speak up on what's right. But if I do, then that could ruin my career. That's not right. So I went for it. And there was a lot of things going on at that time. And it seemed like it was a new headline or a new hashtag each and every week. And, you know, I was getting pressured from fans to, hey, Bubba Wallace needs to speak up, you know, and at times before I would kind of shy away from it just because of the downside that it could have. But when I did it, you know, I stepped off into the deep end and it was the right move. And I'm proud of what I've been able to do and continue to do and shed new light on NASCAR for new fans, and kind of develop the sport and change the sport into new ways, into new demographics. And that's super important. So did I wake up on January 1st of 2020 and be like, you know what, we're going to go out and attempt to change the world and change the sport? No, I just went out and like, all right, here's another year. Let's see what it's going to throw at us. And you got to be ready to counterbalance, you know, all the negative that's coming at you with the positive. So that's what I was able to do.
I'm going to assume something. Correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think the important driving factor for Bubba Wallace is that when he gets up in the morning and looks in the mirror, he likes what he sees.
It's off season. My beard's got a little longer. My belly's got a little bit bigger. But other than that, yeah, I can't complain.
I liked what you said after the noose incident back on June 21st, 2020. You said you were incredibly saddened by the painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society and how persistent we must be in the fight against racism. Since that incident, have you noticed anything different about people being maybe a little bit different in the way they look at things like that, or a change in attitude toward things like that?
Yeah, I have. And it's kind of funny. I just sit there. I'm a big people watcher. And you kind of, you know, see some conversations being had, wherever it may be. And you just kind of sit there and think of things. And it's like, man, I wonder if this would have been different, you know, years ago, or how much different it was years ago. And so I see change, but I still see that we still have a lot more work to do to get it to where everybody feels comfortable, because a lot of people see it as political. And I'm just simply trying to say treating people right is not political.
Coming away from that incident on June 21st, 2020, what is the main thing that you came away with in that? I mean, that now that when you reflect back on it, you either smile or you say, I wonder if we could have done something different, better, or people could have been different in any particular way.
Yeah, I think there's multiple ways to look at it. But, you know, the way our sport came together in a moment of unity and understanding and love, that was powerful. I think that spread across to every motorsports forum, every news outlet, every person, I think, seeing what NASCAR was about right there. And as much as we don't show it and we try to be the hard bodies and not show any emotions, you know, we stand up for family. And, you know, that was the case right there. So whatever the outcome, you know, may have been, that will never change the sight and the feel that we always have towards fellow drivers. As much as we bump into each other and piss each other off, you know, we still step up for one another. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing, you know, and talking to everybody involved. You know, if that happened again, there would be nothing to change, that we would do it the exact same way. So, you know, it's just everything happens for a reason, coincidence or not. You know, we're all living life every day, not knowing what the outcome may be. So you just keep on going.
Also, one final question about your driving experience. I know it's early in your career, but has there been anything that you've accomplished that is kind of engraved in your mind that makes you smile the most, Bubba?
You know, I look at Indy. You know, you read that stat off earlier. You know, that was probably our best race there. You know, finishing second at Daytona was really cool. You know, I'm not going to downplay that, but finishing third at Indy was stout, and I really enjoyed that race. And even actually the All-Star Open win that we had in dramatic fashion last year in 2019, that was pretty cool too. So those moments right there, I look back and smile on and look forward to doing a lot more of it.
One final question also. I know you've signed on with Columbia Sportswear. They're one of your sponsors. I've always been fascinated about the relationship between sponsors and athletes in particular. Knowing your philosophy about things, what do you look for when it comes to a sponsorship? And what was it particularly with Columbia Sportswear you liked?
Yeah, no, they actually, you know, took a stance with me, and they wanted to be a part of the journey for creating change. And I thought that was, you know, that was a positive right there. And it's like, okay, this is a massive brand that wants to be a part of a small person like me and help my career grow. So, you know, I told them, you know, the first conversation we had, I said, this isn't a sponsorship. This is a partnership because we're in this together. So we got to treat it like it's a relationship, really, and figure out how to help each other grow and do the right thing together and make positive change. And so much, you know, as much as they're on the race cars and a part of, you know, my everyday life, it's really what's going on behind the scenes to make the world a better place that Columbia, myself, DoorDash, everybody, they want to be a part of moving that message forward in the right way. So you can't go wrong with those.
Bubba, I want to thank you very much. This has been so insightful and enlightening. I hope you'll come back and visit with me once again because we have people, the armed forces, listen to us around the world. You are welcome here anytime, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Have a blessed day.
Bubba Wallace with us. We continue with more of You and America's Sports Talk Show.